This podcast is brought to you by Money Control.
Co-living is nothing new for a country like India, where the shared economy culture has been accepted far and wide. However, what's new is the entry of tech-based startups in the space who are trying to give this sector a whole new dimension with the competitive pricing and brilliant infrastructure. Hello and welcome to Money Control. This is Priyanka Sahai and you're tuned into Setting Sail, our weekly podcast, where we get you the country's best known entrepreneurs and CEOs to tell you the stories by themselves. And without any doubt, our today's topic is the super fast growth of this very space in India. And we have with us Rohit Kapoor, CEO of our new real estate business of OYO, which has been backed by SoftBank in India. Thank you so much, Rohit, for taking time out for us.
Thank you, Priyanka. Really glad to be here.
So Rohit, first and foremost, why don't you tell me what is the prime reason behind this super fast growth of co-living? Because as we know, co-living is something which has been happening for like ages in India because of the millennials that have been there. But suddenly we are seeing that a lot of young companies, a lot of companies who are backed by venture capital investors have actually started entering into this space.
So Priyanka, you're right. If you're referring to the PG system which has existed in India for a longest period of time, or even joint families, India is uniquely positioned that way to accept the concept. However, I think there's one point where this digresses, is where the new generation in India is really looking for a product which is very different, right? So at a conceptual level, while you may say it has existed, at a different level, I'll say it has never existed in India, right? So what are those elements? Those elements include things like freedom, things like being able to rent a place without biases, things like technology, things like accessibility and visibility to what exists in different parts of the country, belonging to a network or a brand, different aspects of services including food, in the future laundry, multiple other services. So the ecosystem which has been required to operate this, right, is rather recent. It has not been there for a very long period of time. One can argue again that it has existed in some shape or form in unorganized sector. The neighborhood dhobi always used to be there, right? So that argument is always around, but at an organized level. To give you a simple example, today if a young professional takes a job in Gurgaon and lives there for, let's say, 2 years or 1 year, after that the person who takes up another job in Bangalore gets transferred, now it's a whole new search all over again. But in my network today, all they need to do is call and say, I want to transfer to XYZ building, and it is done, right?
So, then what notice are they supposed to give you?
So we require 30 days notice before anybody decides to leave us. There is no lock-in. All we need is 30 day notice. But in case of transfers, etc., we are far more flexible because you are transferring within the same network, right? So there is a huge difference in terms of the way the sector is getting organized now. And with brands coming in, you'll find the product also A, improving, and B, catering to very different needs which the young generation has.
So technically talking, furniture is there. Basic amenities like television, refrigerator, AC, cooler, whatever is required for that specific city is there. Plus security is there. Is that all that you offer? Is there more?
So if you were to think about it from a very core standpoint, right? You do have basic furniture which is available to you, right? You have a shared ecosystem of kitchen, laundry or washing machines, refrigerators. The building is always enabled for full Wi-Fi, so you don't have to bother about that. There's shared television, common rooms. In some buildings, you also have play areas, those kind of things. But beyond that, there's a natural community which gets formed, but we also foster it through multiple events. For example, now Navratras will be there, or Diwali will be there, or Holi is there, or any other festival is there. A lot of people are away from home and they don't necessarily get a chance to go back. To the extent possibly, we help in creating that small community atmosphere. I have a group where I keep seeing these pictures floating in. Yesterday there was a carom where there was a dumb charades competition happening in some other building. The whole idea is get people in, provide them a community-based environment. And also I have been pleasantly surprised by the self-governing nature of the community. Because while you can have house rules and you do have those, we do find that the communities or ecosystems in a very nice way tend to self-regulate, self-govern also to a large extent.
Absolutely. Right?
In terms of security, we provide CCTV coverage in all our buildings. In locations where we feel that we need more, we also have security guards posted there full-time. But there's a 24/7 supervisor who's always there, either stationed in that building or in a cluster of buildings in that same area.
Okay. And having said that, you know, I'm also seeing something which is very interesting. Conventionally, how PG accommodations have worked, especially in cities like Delhi, NCR, is that there will be a separate building for maybe, say, like women. There will be a separate structure for boys. There's not been, or I would say, co-living as a culture has not been very prominent in places like these, wherein girls and boys can together accommodate a living space. Is OYO also looking into that hemisphere? Aren't parents concerned if, you know, they're leaving their daughters who are studying in hostels? Are you taking these concerns into consideration?
No, sir, absolutely. I think these are very valid concerns in a country like India. And I think any parent, or forget a parent, any adult has valid questions around this. We have a job to put out a product in the market and have the consumer accept it in the shape or form they want to consume it. So I don't think we are in the business of either moralizing to say that this is right or that is right or wrong, or in the business of saying that A should always prefer A option and B should always prefer B option. We have all kinds of products and options in the market. They are transparently available and displayed on our website. People interestingly choose options of what they want to do.
Right.
So at some level, to say that a women's only is safer or a co-living is not so safe, I don't think there is data or evidence behind it.
Sure.
It's more our perceptions today, right? But if you want a women's only environment, that too is available.
Mm-hmm.
And equally, if you want to stay in a environment where people of both sexes live, that also is available. Now let me ask you a question, right? In a residential society, we don't even think like this. We have all families, everyone living in the same tower,
mm-hmm.
right? We don't even think like this option.
Sure.
So here, either we believe our young people are completely responsible, right? Which surprisingly they are not. Or there is a different dynamic or morality which we want to impose on them, which is also not fair.
Sure.
Right? So ours is an option we put out in the market. People are adults. They choose with open minds, right? And I think it is far more interesting to observe what people end up choosing versus what we end up believing they want.
You know, what's even more interesting is that unlike how it always has happened, a majority of these co-living spaces or PGs or hostels that you knew were occupied by students. Now what we are getting to see with these properties coming up, a lot of young professionals are actually choosing these spaces. What is the ratio that you have and how do you see this trend growing?
So in the pure co-living product, because we, you know, we are also entering into student housing, which is a different, slightly different category, we see ratio of about 70 to 30. So 70% are young professionals. It's very logical for them. If you think about it, let's take an example of a girl moving out of Allahabad into a job in Bangalore. What are the processes in the past? First, somebody will say, oh, I know this uncle or this friend of mine who lives in Bangalore, you should first go and stay a few days with them and then figure out, they will advise you what to do in that city, right? Today, that young person's typical response is, Papa, aap chhod do, main dekh lungi, right? Because they want to lead their own independent lives.
Right.
Now, what do? They typically, and if you go to Bangalore, the traffic situation or the urban complexity is so high that they will like to stay next to their office.
Mm-hmm.
Because the commute time, nobody wants to incur today as a cost. It's a cost standard of living, right?
Sure.
And probably the biggest tax we pay is the idle, unproductive time we spend in traffic, in getting to work and coming back from work.
Yeah.
So they will easily come to our website and say, I am working here, I'm going to work here. Here is a good option. I know the price transparently. I know the location. I know the product. At best, I'll go and visit once to check it physically, how it looks like. And all I need to do is to pay a very attractive, I'll say, price per month, 1 month security deposit, and I'm done. And only thing I need is a KYC, which is any standard government ID proof that you require to show as a citizen of the country.
Right.
Nothing more.
Right.
So there's no obligation to reach out to that uncle whom I have not met in the last 25 years, right? Or I'm not comfortable doing that. If you think of these, I have a 15-year-old who's already started telling me that main kar lunga, right? He's still 15 and I have no illusion that at 18 he's going to come and ask me saying, Papa, mereko kya kya karna chahiye, batao.
Right.
And we also wanted to be like that.
Absolutely, yes.
We couldn't be like that. It's a separate issue. Right? Because the generation we grew up in, right? Or at least I grew up in.
Yeah.
But as a native preference, was it not the preference? Absolutely, it was the preference.
Right.
Today, I think there are organizations which are enabling that choice.
Okay.
I think enabling a democratic choice is the biggest social good you can do to a country. People don't want to incur. I think we are a very asset-light generation coming in front of us. Look, there has been talk in the media about young people not wanting to own cars, except the mobile phone. I think that remains a big personal gadget, right? But rest every category, people are saying that I don't want to own it. I want to use it. Just imagine, I read this very nice article today by Santosh Desai. The whole concept of ownership, like I used to go to Park Street and collect these vinyl records, right? Today all you need is a 999 subscription somewhere.
Absolutely.
To have your infinite global library. This is a generation which is really, really doesn't even know what asset ownership, what does a cassette collection mean or a CD collection mean.
Absolutely.
We used to dust that and like own it for years. I still have it.
Yeah.
I still have cassettes lying in some cardboard box which I refuse to give away for sentimental reasons. But
right.
So this is really a generation which is demanding a lot.
Okay. So right now when you were talking, you said that 70% of the current occupancy is coming from corporate or young professionals, so as to say. Where's the rest 30% coming from?
Variety. I'll say students who are choosing these places, sometimes even married couples, young families, very small percentage right now. But we do find them choosing a single room with a kitchenette kind of an option. Right? So that's the balance 30%, but mostly it will be students, I think. I suspect the majority of the 30% students.
And student housing, I would imagine, is one big sector which is, or one big space which is going to emerge in the co-living space. What sort of expansion is lying there?
So we've already, you know, done a few monkey tie-ups. We have tied up with serving IIT Delhi for their hostel in Delhi. We are serving a university called Plaksha. We are also having contracts with 3 or 4 universities. We've recently formed a vertical which is expanding that. I think it's a contiguous category to co-living, but requires certain different sales channels because it is also a lot more B2B. Plus, here the big difference is the buyer is the parent. Except at the PG level, even at the UG level, the buyer is the parent and the consumer is the student.
Yeah.
So it changes the dynamic of how the product is configured and what you need to deliver there. But a lot of things are in common. So I suspect we'll see both co-living and student housing being natural extensions.
But when you talk about student housing, will these be the properties of the colleges? So for that matter,
not necessary.
So you will have your standalone property and you'll offer maybe an IIT Delhi, a partnership or something like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Also, we do it to specs. So it is a little bit in the middle where, let's say IIT Delhi or any other institution says, I need these kind of facilities or these kind of specs. At these prices, whatever I'm looking for within this distance or area, and we find a building which is commensurate, we make it to that specs and we do it very fast. So we can turn it around in like 30-60 days, right?
Okay.
And the hostel is run to their specs.
And how many colleges have you already tied up with?
We have tied up with about 6 colleges right now.
Which will include?
So IIT Delhi, Plaksha is in the public news and there are 4 more there.
Okay. And going forward, what sort of an expansion is lined up?
So look, I think on student housing, we are still building out the expansion across all categories. We want to hit a milestone of 1 lakh beds in the next few months.
And you know, there are a bunch of younger startups that have been there. I think Nestaway is one of them.
Sure.
There's another one which has also been trying to raise investor money. What is your appetite for an acquisition in this space? Because I'm sure you're aggressive in expanding, but do you see any merit in existing startups in this space and would you be looking at acquiring them?
Look, I think we have a history as a company of acquiring different startups at different points in time. And the last count I remember was about 14 and those founders still work with us as partners. I don't see it as a imperative which is urgent for us. It's not I am seeking out an acquisition in the market because we do feel we are onto a nice organic focused on profitability growth path. But at the same time, if there's something which makes sense,
let me frame it in a manner. Yeah. If you were to acquire, what would be the key metrics you'll look at?
It has to be capability led. It has to be capability led, where we find a set of individuals or a team which is very high on capability, which we can develop, but it could take us time to develop over time. I don't think we acquired just to for scale.
Okay.
Or for the effect of just being bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have taken that lens any time in any acquisition so far.
Right.
Neither do we intend to in the future, because people come with their own complexities.
Absolutely. Right?
And if I can create the same thing organically, that will always be a preference. Unless I find that my time to market for something will be very long if I develop it internally, versus there is a fantastic team out there which you think can come on board and boost us forward in our mission.
Okay. Do you think that this concept is just picking up in the metro cities, or tier 2, 3 cities also have scope for this?
Look, I personally feel that this concept is applicable anywhere where these two conditions exist.
Mm-hmm.
One, there is a large enough migrant population of young professionals. Two, where there is a large enough migrant population of students. Wherever these two conditions exist,
mm-hmm.
in any market, this will take off.
Right.
So in some sense, it's very linked to either the economic activity or the educational activity
sure.
of a particular city. So just to give an example, Dehradun is very attractive from a student housing standpoint.
Right.
So it's just considered a strong education hub. So that's the way to look at it, rather than say ki, so any tier 2 city which is strong on young professionals
mm-hmm.
moving in for jobs
mm-hmm.
is a natural target. Yeah.
So yeah, you know, I would like to know as to currently in how many cities are you already present in, and on those cities, what are the expansion plans, or maybe other city expansion plans?
So we're present in 9 cities now,
mm-hmm.
right? And each of these are very deep markets. So just to give you a sense, the top 12 cities are almost 40-50% of urban population in India, right? And I always say this for effect a little bit, also for reality, is that NCR is the size of Malaysia. Right? So our urban markets are so deep that for me, each one of them is probably the size of a company.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be sharing some numbers soon where you realize that some of our cities have become equal to the third or fourth largest player in the market.
And if I may try and understand, given that, you know, this is, I'm sure the money is coming from the large pool, whatever the expansion is lined up. But what are the investors saying for this expansion? What is their vision for this?
Look, I think this is one of the categories where the investors are very supportive. This is not just an India theme, it's a global theme. I met co-living players in New York, I met co-living players in London, in other markets. While the world is different, it is also very similar. Right. The challenges are same. The travel, trying to find accommodation is same. It's either biases or costs or deposits or need to buy assets, etc., etc. So the theme is global. It is probably one of the largest themes from a real estate tech standpoint, right? So they're very supportive. At the same time, I don't personally, as CEO of this venture, I feel that it is something which is never granted. We have to earn our right in any ecosystem to A, B scale, second, be profitable, right? And as long as both are happening and we're providing consumers huge amount of value, right? We will have enough capital to scale up. So capital is not a constraint, but always I'm very thoughtful about, you know, using that privilege.
So on that note, yeah. Why don't you tell us how much time does it take for one outlet or one a structure for you to get profitable, or at least unit economic profitable, and what's your vision for profitability in totality?
So look, there you'll be surprised on how fast the building gets profitable in our case. So we look at a steady state profitability in 4 months, where the building has to stand on its own feet in terms of profitability. Yeah.
4 months after you start renting that space, and this comes at what amount of occupancy?
So we start getting profitable at about 70% occupancy.
Which starts to happen by around 4 months of operation.
Yeah.
And in terms of a total profitability of this structure, this OYO space, what is your vision like? By when do you see this unit getting profitable?
Look, I think we always focus first on unit economics and make sure the unit economics is solid at the building level. After that, the company level profitability or the division level profitability is a function of what pace you're scaling up. and how much inventory you are adding every month to the system.
Right.
So there, right now, it's too early for us to give a exact predictable number saying I want to be profitable next month. But I can promise you it is far more aggressive than you imagine it to be.
All right. On that note, Rohit, a quick one last question. In terms of pricing strategy, I understand that it starts at 5999 to begin with, but what is the extreme end and what gets added to it?
Look, I think the median is probably 6,500-7,000 is the right answer. It starts at 5999. In some cases, it's even lower than that in some options. It can go up to 13,000-14,000 in that range. But those are very location specific. My inventory at 14,000 is very small.
Okay.
Or in markets like Mumbai, where the fundamentally real estate is far more expensive.
Sure.
We have a strong focus on keeping it affordable. And over and above the base price you pay, there's a small amount of common area charges, electricity as per use.
Mm-hmm.
So there are not a lot of charges which you have to pay beyond this. It's a simple contract. You pay 1 month deposit. You pay 1 month advance rent, you give us 30 days notice.
Mm-hmm.
There is a CAU charge which is shared among residents for the building. The electricity is on consumption, so you pay it as per this. And after that, any services that you consume, you pay pay as you go.
Which
so
is
you
like want over food, and above cost.
You want
right.
food, you don't want food, you want to use this, you don't
Do
want
you
to use this.
Do you have tie-ups for food?
Yes, yes. So food is an option we are building and tie up across all our buildings. In different shapes and forms. So we have places where vending machines, you can go and get stuff from there. We are building contracts with some of the our own cloud kitchen play with other operators in the market. Food is something which we want to provide enough options to people. It's not there in every building today, but in 30 days time, we'll have an option for food in every building for us.
Every building that exists at least for now.
Absolutely.
And going forward, whenever you're starting a new structure, all
it
of
will
that
be
will be
like
having,
that.
Having.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So on that note, Rohit, I would really like to thank you for joining this conversation and really appreciate you for your time.
Thank you so much. This is a very exciting opportunity. We are super excited to build this as we go along.
Absolutely.
And now a word on a subscription product. Money Control Pro offers actionable investment ideas, independent research, insights and analysis from the world of business, economy, politics and policy. Get access to Money Control Pro at ₹599 for a year. Use code GETPRO. For more information, check out the Money Control website or mobile app.
Okay, so that's all that we have for this episode of Setting Sail. Meanwhile, if you have any comments or queries, you can write on to us. Our email is mcpodcast@w18.com. Till then, for more news, views and updates, stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.